Before we dive in, I should mention this entire episode is AI-generated, including the voices you're hearing. Today's show is brought to you by Clean Slate Task Manager, the fictional productivity app that organizes your to-do list by moral complexity. Though Clean Slate is entirely made up for this demo, some details in our discussion might be inaccurate, so please fact-check anything important to you. I'm Sarah. And today we're exploring one of the most unsettling books about corporate life ever written. Robert Jackall's Moral Mazes takes us inside the actual decision-making processes of large corporations, and what he found challenges everything we think we know about business ethics. Joining me is Robert Chen, a former Fortune 500 executive who spent 15 years navigating exactly the kind of environments Jackall studied. Robert, you've said this book changed how you understood your own career. What drew you to it initially?
I picked it up during a particularly difficult period at my company. We were facing a product safety issue, and I was watching brilliant, ethical people somehow arrive at decisions that seemed completely divorced from their personal values. Jackall's book explained what I was witnessing.
For listeners who haven't read it, Jackall spent years doing ethnographic research inside major corporations. He wasn't looking at what companies say they do, but what managers actually do when faced with moral decisions day to day.
Exactly. He interviewed hundreds of managers and observed them in action. What makes this book so powerful is that it's not theoretical. It's based on real conversations with real people making real decisions under corporate pressures.
Why did Jackall write this book in the first place? What problem was he trying to solve?
He saw a gap between how we talk about business ethics and how ethics actually work in corporate settings. Most business ethics training assumes individuals make isolated moral choices, but Jackall realized that's not how corporate life works at all.
The book emerged from his background in sociology, right? He was applying sociological methods to understand corporate culture.
Right, and that sociological lens is crucial. Instead of asking, what should managers do, he asked, what do managers actually do and why? That shift from normative to descriptive analysis is what makes the book so revealing.
What gave Jackall the credibility to write this? How did he gain access to these corporate environments?
He was a professor at Williams College and later University of Massachusetts, but more importantly, he convinced several major corporations to let him essentially live among their managers for extended periods. That kind of embedded research was pretty rare in business studies at the time.
And the companies cooperated because they thought he was studying management effectiveness, not moral decision-making.
Partly, yes. I think they also genuinely believed their moral frameworks were sound and would withstand scrutiny. What Jackall found was more subtle and systemic than outright corruption.
Let's talk about what he actually found. What's the central thesis of moral mazes?
The core argument is that large corporations create what he calls moral myopia. Managers aren't evil people making evil choices. They're rational people making rational choices within a system that systematically obscures moral consequences.
Break that down for us. What does moral myopia look like in practice?
Managers learn to see only the immediate consequences of their actions within their organizational unit, not the broader moral implications. A marketing manager focuses on market share, not whether the product actually helps people. An accountant focuses on the numbers adding up, not what those numbers represent in human terms.
Jackall argues this isn't accidental. It's how these organizations are designed to function.
Exactly. The division of labor, the hierarchical structure, the performance metrics, they all work together to fragment moral responsibility. No single person feels responsible for the ultimate outcome because everyone is just doing their piece.
What's the historical context here? What was Jackall responding to in terms of previous thinking about business ethics?
Most business ethics work at the time focused on individual character and decision-making frameworks. The assumption was that if you put good people in corporate roles and gave them the right ethical training, they'd make good decisions.
But Jackall found that individual character wasn't the determining factor.
Not at all. He found that structural forces within corporations were far more powerful than individual moral inclinations. Good people consistently made questionable decisions, not because they lacked ethics, but because the system rewarded certain behaviors and punished others.
This connects to broader sociological work about institutions shaping behavior, doesn't it?
Yes, he's building on thinkers like Max Weber, who wrote about bureaucratic rationality. But Jackall goes further by showing exactly how this plays out in modern corporate settings, with concrete examples and real-world implications.
What makes his perspective distinct from other critiques of corporate behavior?
He's not arguing that corporations are inherently evil or that capitalism is fundamentally flawed. He's making a more nuanced point about how organizational structures create unintended moral consequences, even when everyone involved has good intentions.
Now let's get into the specific mechanisms Jackall identified. What are the key frameworks he uses to explain how these moral mazes actually work?
The first major concept is what he calls organizational loyalty versus personal ethics. Managers learn that loyalty to the organization, meaning their boss, their division, their company, becomes the primary moral framework, superseding other considerations.
Can you give us a concrete example of how this plays out?
Jackall describes a case where a manager discovered that a company product had safety defects. Instead of immediately reporting this to regulators, the manager's first instinct was to report it up the corporate hierarchy and wait for guidance on how to handle it.
And what happened in that case?
The information got filtered through multiple levels, with each level focusing on different concerns: liability, public relations, market impact. By the time it reached decision makers, the original safety concern had become just one factor among many.
That illustrates another key concept, doesn't it? What Jackall calls the filtering process.
Exactly. Information gets transformed as it moves through organizational hierarchies. Each person in the chain has different incentives and focuses on different aspects of the problem. The moral urgency often gets diluted.
How does this filtering process actually work day to day? Walk us through the mechanics.
Let's say you're a middle manager and you discover something troubling. Before you report it, you ask yourself, how will this reflect on my judgment? Will my boss think I'm causing problems? How will this affect my team's performance metrics?
So the information gets shaped by these concerns before it even leaves your desk.
Right. You might downplay the severity, emphasize the uncertainty, or frame it as a minor issue that can be easily resolved. Not because you're trying to deceive anyone, but because you're responding to organizational incentives.
Jackall also writes about something he calls moral flexibility. What does he mean by that?
Moral flexibility is the ability to adjust your ethical standards based on organizational needs. Managers learn to view moral principles as guidelines rather than absolute rules, and to make exceptions when the organization requires it.
That sounds like rationalization. How is it different?
It's more systematic than individual rationalization. The organization actually teaches this flexibility as a professional skill. You learn that being too rigid about ethical principles makes you ineffective as a manager.
Can you give us an example of how this moral flexibility gets institutionalized?
Jackall describes performance review processes where managers are evaluated on results, not methods. If you achieve your targets while following strict ethical guidelines, you're seen as competent. If you achieve them by being more flexible, you're seen as exceptional.
The system actively rewards moral flexibility.
Yes. And it doesn't happen through explicit corruption. It happens through promotion patterns, assignment of challenging projects, access to senior leadership. The message is subtle but clear. Flexibility gets rewarded.
Another major concept is what Jackall calls the blame game. How does this work?
When things go wrong, organizations need someone to take responsibility. But the actual decision-making process is so diffused that it's often impossible to pinpoint who's really responsible. So blame gets assigned based on organizational politics rather than actual causation.
What does this look like in practice, Kais?
Jackall gives the example of a product launch that failed. The marketing manager blamed inadequate funding from finance. Finance blamed unrealistic projections from marketing. Senior leadership blamed poor execution at the operational level. Everyone had a plausible story.
And meanwhile, the actual systemic issues that caused the failure never get addressed.
Exactly. The blame game serves to protect the organizational structure itself. Individual scapegoats take the fall, but the underlying patterns that create these problems remain intact.
How does this blame dynamic affect how managers make decisions going forward?
It creates what Jackall calls CYA behavior. Managers spend enormous amounts of energy documenting their decisions and creating paper trails, not to improve decision-making, but to protect themselves if things go wrong.
That seems like it would slow everything down and make decision-making less effective.
Absolutely does. But from an individual manager's perspective, it's rational. Better to be slow and protected than fast and vulnerable. The organizational cost is diffused, but the individual risk is very real.
Let's talk about what Jackall calls getting along by going along. This seems to be another key mechanism.
This is about how managers learn to suppress dissent and avoid challenging organizational decisions, even when they privately disagree. The culture rewards consensus and punishes troublemaking.
How does this actually manifest in meetings and daily interactions?
Managers learn to read the room and understand what positions are acceptable before they speak. They phrase disagreements as implementation concerns rather than fundamental objections. They focus on how to make bad decisions work rather than whether those decisions should be made at all.
Jackall provides a particularly striking example of this involving environmental regulations, doesn't he?
He describes a case where managers knew their company was violating environmental standards, but instead of addressing the violations, they focused on managing regulatory relationships and minimizing enforcement actions.
The assumption was that compliance was impossible or impractical, so the goal became managing non-compliance.
Exactly. And what's striking is that nobody explicitly decided to violate environmental laws. It emerged through a series of smaller decisions about resource allocation, priorities, and risk management. Each individual decision seemed reasonable.
This connects to Jackall's broader point about how moral mazes obscure the connection between individual actions and collective outcomes.
Right. Each manager could honestly say they were just doing their job and following organizational procedures. The moral problem emerged from the system as a whole, not from any individual's malicious intent.
Now let's talk about implementation. If someone reading this book recognizes these patterns in their own organization, what can they actually do about it?
That's the challenging part. Jackall is primarily descriptive, not prescriptive. He's better at helping you understand what's happening than telling you how to fix it. But awareness itself is valuable.
How so? What does awareness actually change?
Once you recognize these patterns, you can start making more conscious choices about when to go along and when to push back. You realize that what feels like individual moral failure is often systemic pressure, which is oddly liberating.
Can you walk us through a specific scenario? Let's say someone is in a meeting where they think the group is making a questionable decision.
First, recognize what forces are at play. Is this getting along by going along? Is there blame avoidance happening? Are people focused on organizational loyalty rather than broader ethical concerns? Just naming these dynamics can help you think more clearly.
And then what? How do you actually intervene?
You have to choose your battles carefully. Sometimes you can reframe the discussion by asking questions that broaden the scope. What are the long-term risks here? Or how will our customers view this? These questions don't directly challenge anyone, but expand the moral frame.
That's interesting. Working within the system rather than opposing it directly.
Exactly. Direct moral challenges often get dismissed as naive or impractical. But if you can connect ethical concerns to organizational interests, reputation, long-term profitability, regulatory risk, you're more likely to be heard.
What about individual decision-making? How should someone apply these insights to their own choices?
One key insight is to regularly step back and ask yourself, what moral consequences am I not seeing because of my organizational role? Try to trace the full impact of your decisions, not just the immediate organizational outcomes.
How do you actually do that in practice? It sounds abstract.
Take a concrete decision you're facing. Write down all the stakeholders who will be affected, not just the organizational ones. Include customers, communities, future employees. Then ask, what would each of these groups want you to do?
And if there are conflicts between what's good for the organization and what's good for these other stakeholders?
That's where moral flexibility becomes a choice rather than an automatic response. You can consciously decide when organizational loyalty should trump other considerations rather than just defaulting to organizational interests.
What about career implications? Won't this kind of thinking hurt someone's advancement prospects?
Potentially, yes. Jackall is honest about this. The system rewards certain behaviors and punishes others. But he also notes that managers who develop reputation for thoughtful decision-making often do better in the long run, even if they face short-term costs.
Are there specific strategies for managing these career tensions?
One approach is to become really good at translating ethical concerns into business language. Instead of saying this is wrong, you say this creates regulatory risk or this could damage our brand. You're raising the same concerns, but in terms the organization can hear.
What about documenting decisions? Jackall talks about how CYA behavior distorts decision-making, but surely some documentation is necessary.
The key is to document the reasoning behind decisions, not just the decisions themselves. Include the alternatives you considered, the stakeholders you thought about, the risks you identified. This creates accountability rather than just legal protection.
Let's talk about common mistakes people make when trying to apply these insights.
The biggest mistake is thinking you can simply opt out of organizational dynamics. Even if you recognize moral myopia or blame games, you're still embedded in the system. The goal is conscious engagement, not naive resistance.
What does conscious engagement look like versus naive resistance?
Naive resistance is refusing to participate in organizational processes because they seem morally compromised. Conscious engagement is participating but maintaining awareness of the moral trade-offs and looking for opportunities to nudge things in better directions.
Another mistake people make is trying to change everything at once.
Yes. Jackall shows how entrenched these patterns are. Trying to single-handedly reform corporate culture is likely to fail and may end your career. Better to focus on your sphere of influence and gradually expand it.
How long does it typically take to see results from this kind of approach?
Individual awareness can change your decision-making immediately, but changing organizational patterns takes years, and even then, it's often incremental. You might influence how your team approaches problems or how certain types of decisions get made in your division.
Are there situations where Jackall's insights don't apply or where the advice might backfire?
The framework works best in large bureaucratic organizations. In smaller companies or startups, individual influence is often greater and decision-making more direct. The moral maze patterns are less entrenched.
What about highly regulated industries like healthcare or finance?
Interestingly, heavy regulation can sometimes make the moral mazes more complex, not less. Managers become experts at compliance while losing sight of the underlying purposes the regulations were meant to serve.
If someone could only implement one insight from this book, what should it be?
Regularly ask yourself, what moral consequences am I not seeing? The organizational role you're in is designed to focus your attention on certain things and away from others. Consciously broadening your perspective is the most important single change you can make.
Let's talk about the book critically. What does Moral Mazes do brilliantly?
The descriptive analysis is unparalleled. Jackall shows you exactly how these organizational dynamics work with a level of detail and insight that's genuinely eye-opening. The ethnographic approach gives him access to information that surveys or interviews alone couldn't capture.
The writing itself is pretty accessible too, considering its academic research.
Yes, he writes clearly and uses compelling examples. He lets the managers speak for themselves through extensive quotes, which makes the abstract concepts very concrete. You really feel like you're inside these organizations.
Where does the book fall short or overpromise?
The biggest limitation is that it's almost entirely diagnostic. He's brilliant at explaining what's wrong, but offers very little guidance on how to make things better. For a book that reveals such serious problems, the solutions section is disappointingly thin.
That seems like a pretty significant omission for readers who want to actually change their situations.
It is frustrating. He raises your awareness, but then leaves you to figure out what to do with that awareness. I think he genuinely wasn't sure what the solutions were, but he could have been more explicit about that uncertainty.
Are there other limitations to his analysis?
The research is from the 1980s, and some organizational dynamics have changed. There's more awareness of stakeholder capitalism now, more emphasis on corporate social responsibility. Though I'd argue the fundamental patterns he identified are still very much present.
How does this book compare to other work on business ethics or organizational behavior?
It's much more empirically grounded than most business ethics work, which tends to be either philosophical or prescriptive. And it's more morally engaged than typical organizational behavior research, which often treats these dynamics as morally neutral.
Are there books that complement this one well?
I'd recommend reading it alongside more prescriptive works like Joseph Badaracco's Leading Quietly or Lynn Payne's Value Shift. Those books take up where Jackall leaves off, offering practical strategies for ethical leadership within organizational constraints.
What about criticisms the book has received over time?
Some critics argue it's too pessimistic, that it underestimates individuals' capacity for moral agency within organizations. Others say the research base, while deep, isn't broad enough to support such sweeping conclusions about corporate behavior generally.
Do you find those criticisms valid?
Partly. I think Jackall could have been more explicit about variation across organizations and individuals. But having worked in these environments myself, I find his core observations remarkably accurate. The patterns he describes are real and widespread.
There's also been criticism that the book is dated, that corporate culture has evolved since the 1980s.
Corporate rhetoric has certainly evolved. Companies talk much more about values and stakeholder responsibility now. But when you look at actual decision-making processes, especially during crises, you still see the same moral myopia and blame dynamics Jackall identified.
Let's talk about the book's broader impact. How has it influenced thinking about corporate culture?
It's become a classic in business schools, particularly in courses on business ethics and organizational behavior. It introduced the idea that ethical failures aren't primarily about bad individuals, but about organizational structures that shape behavior.
Has it influenced actual corporate practice?
It's harder to measure. I think it's made some executives more aware of how organizational dynamics can undermine ethical decision-making. But whether that awareness has translated into structural changes is less clear.
What about in popular culture? Has the book had influence beyond business circles?
It's been influential in sociology and public policy discussions about corporate accountability. The insights about how large organizations diffuse moral responsibility have been applied to understanding everything from financial crises to environmental disasters.
How has the conversation around corporate ethics changed since Jackall wrote this book?
There's much more attention to stakeholder capitalism and environmental, social, and governance factors in corporate decision-making. But I'd argue these are often overlays on the same underlying organizational dynamics Jackall described.
Meaning the structural problems he identified haven't really been addressed.
Right. Companies have gotten better at managing ethical issues from a public relations perspective. But the internal decision-making processes that create moral mazes in the first place haven't fundamentally changed.
As we wrap up, what's the single most important thing our listeners should think about differently after hearing this discussion?
Stop assuming that ethical failures in organizations are primarily about individual character flaws. Start looking at how organizational structures and incentives shape behavior. That shift in perspective changes everything about how you think about corporate accountability and reform.
And if someone wants to read this book, what should they be prepared for?
Be prepared to see your own workplace differently. Jack All will help you understand why good people sometimes make bad decisions, but he won't give you easy answers about what to do with that understanding. The book raises more questions than it answers.
But those questions are worth grappling with.
Absolutely. Even if you can't solve all the problems Jack All identifies, understanding them makes you a more conscious participant in organizational life. And that consciousness, multiplied across many individuals, might eventually lead to meaningful change.
Robert Chen, thank you for walking us through Moral Mazes. For everyone else, the key insight to take with you is this. The next time you see questionable corporate behavior, ask not just who's responsible, but what organizational dynamics made this seem like a reasonable choice to the people involved. That shift in thinking is the beginning of real change.